400-verse treatise by Aryadeva, chapter 12, indicating the meditations for refuting attraction to distorted views. A listener who is upright and unbiased, has common sense discrimination, and takes keen interest, is described as being a proper vessel for these voidness teachings. To the mind of such a suitable disciple, the good qualities of the profounder of the teachings will not change into a different aspect and appear as false. Nor will this change of good qualities into faults happen with respect to the listener either. Buddha spoke of compulsive samsaric existence as true suffering, and the method of entering compulsive existence as the true origin of suffering. Also, the method of pacifying both as the true pathway mind, and likewise their pacification as a true stopping. But worldly ones who are improper vessels and therefore cannot comprehend this at all will attribute the fault of their inability to understand as if it were that of the able sage Buddha. You Samkhyas and Vaisheshikas are really amazing. You wish to pass beyond sorrow to nirvana by giving up all, and yet you still cling to your belief in truly established existence. What reason is there for you not to be happy at these teachings of voidness, since it's the understanding of them that will extricate all your disturbing emotions and suffering? How can those who do not know the methods for giving up suffering actually come to give it up? Therefore, it is said that except through the teachings on voidness given by the able sage Buddha, there definitely can be no state of peace. Anyone who comes to develop indecisive wavering about the obscure phenomena spoken of by Buddha can resolve his doubts by relying on the fact that his teachings on voidness are verifiably true. In this way, he can develop confidence solely in this very sage, also concerning phenomena extremely obscure. Any non-Buddhist teachers asserting a static creator who have difficulty seeing correctly the actual facts about the gross world are surely charlatans with respect to other more subtle matters, such as the nature of reality. Whoever would follow them will be deceived for a very long while. It is extremely difficult for those who would go themselves to a state beyond sorrow to do that if they still assert true existence. Although Buddha taught voidness for the purpose of leading others to this state, those unfit as vessels for it become frightened of voidness and are unhappy to take it to mind. Those who do not see the advantages of meditation on voidness or the disadvantages of not so doing do not even begin to fear voidness, while those who do see voidness will in all ways turn away from fearing it. Therefore, it is said that fear of voidness arises for sure only in those who know only a little about it. What is completely certain about immature ones is that they are habituated to the very thing that causes them to enter recurring samsaric existence, namely grasping for true existence. Whereas, because they are not habituated to voidness, they become frightened at that very thing that can turn them away from samsaric existence. Anyone, obscured simply by naivety, who would prevent teachings being given on voidness, will not even go to a better rebirth of positive qualities and goodness, so what need to mention liberation? Although degeneration from ethical discipline is a simple matter, it's not at all the same with degeneration from the correct view of voidness. This is because with ethical discipline you can progress only as far as to a higher status rebirth, but with a correct view you can achieve the supreme states of liberation or enlightenment. So, to those who are unfit vessels for the voidness teachings, it's best to teach in accord with their grasping for an impossible self, and not to teach them the lack of an impossible self. For such a one, these teachings would cause him to go to a worse rebirth state by his misunderstanding, whereas for those who are out of the ordinary, they will lead to a state of peace. There's no second gateway to any state of peace other than through the realization of voidness, as it causes all wrong views to fall apart. Thus, what becomes the object of cognition for all Buddhist Aryas is said to be the lack of an impossible self. Those that are unfit vessels generate fear even from the name of this teaching, namely voidness, whereas it can be seen that powerful ones who understand voidness do not generate fear at inferior views. This teaching of voidness was not spoken by the thusly gone Buddhas for the sake of debate, but be this as it may, it burns off the wrong views of the proponents of all other teachings, like fuel by fire. Anyone who comes to know this teaching of voidness will not be happy with other views claiming truly established existence. Therefore, this teaching seems to me like a threshold at which all wrong views fall apart. In reality, there is no truly existent self. So what Arya, abiding in what Buddha intended, thinking like that, would become excited about the conventionally existent self, and what Arya would become frightened by the totally non-existent impossible self. After seeing so many Tirthaka holders of incorrect salvationist views, which will become the seed for their meaningless suffering in samsaric existence, who wouldn't develop compassion for these beings who wish the teachings for liberation? The followers of these three, the Shakya sage, the naked Jains, and the Brahmins, uphold their Dharma teachings respectively through their minds, their eyes, and their ears. Because of that, the tradition of the classical texts of the able sage Buddha is the subtlest. Just as concerning the Brahmins, most of their Dharma teaching can be said to be external hypocritical rituals, likewise concerning the naked Jains, most of their Dharma can be said to be ridiculous. Just as some develop respect for the Brahmins' tradition because they need only have taken on the recitation of the Vedas, likewise some become kindly toward the naked Jains' tradition because they need only take on deluded actions such as exposing themselves to the elements. Because the suffering of the Jains' asceticism is the ripening of karma, how could it come to be considered a Dharma practice? It isn't. And because birth as a Brahmin is the ripening of karma, it's not a Dharma practice either. The thusly gone Buddhists have said that the practice of Dharma is, in short, doing no harm in order to attain a higher status rebirth and realizing voidness, the natural state beyond sorrow, in order to attain liberation or enlightenment. In this Buddha Dharma, there are only these two. But for all worldly ones, their own positions become as attractive as their own places of birth. For what reason should the causes for reversing this attachment, namely not harming and realizing voidness, be attractive to them? But those with sense will most graciously accept topics of knowledge useful for liberation, even from other traditions. Isn't the sun universally the same for everyone on this earth in bringing light to those who have eyes?